It's 8 o'clock in South Central Wisconsin, and you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. And under my voice, you're hearing the final bars of Dionisio Aguado's introduction and Rondo Brillant, performed by Shinichi Fukuda guitar. And that just about does it for the program. We've got the 8 o'clock buzz coming up in just a moment, right after headlines from the BBC World Service. You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. This is Peter Haney saying we'll see you on the back porch next week.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. Growing numbers of Afghans living in Pakistan are being forcibly repatriated, according to the International Organization for Migration. The deadline for voluntary returns was at the end of March. More than 8,000 people have been sent to Afghanistan since then. Our Pakistan correspondent is Azadeh Moshiri.
Afghans in Pakistan have told the BBC they are constantly afraid. Several Afghans say Pakistani landlords are turning them away, worried about repercussions for providing them with accommodation. Women's activists or those who worked for organisations from Western countries are terrified of reprisals should they be sent back to Afghanistan, though the Taliban government says everyone can live in the country without fear. Pakistan's taken in millions of Afghans over more than 40 years. But cross-border attacks have stoked tension between the two neighbours. The UN has warned it expects the deportations to continue.
Gaza's Hamas-run Ministry of Health says 58 people have been killed by Israeli strikes over the last day. 19 Palestinians, some of them children, died overnight in central and northern areas of the Strip. The number of victims in the territory has continued to mount daily since Israel resumed its offensive last month. A military court in Azerbaijan has resumed the trial of an Armenian billionaire accused of war crimes. Ruben Vardanyan was the de facto leader of Nagorno-Karabakh, a disputed territory retaken by Azerbaijani troops 18 months ago. Rehan Dimitri reports.
Ruben Vardanyan, one of Armenia's richest men, appeared in the Azerbaijani capital looking thin and weak. He's been twice on hunger strike in protest at what he calls an unfair judicial process. Mr. Vardanyan is facing 42 criminal charges, including waging war and terrorism in Nagorno-Karabakh. His family argues he could not be held responsible, as he only moved there a year before the territory fell to Azerbaijan in 2023.
China has vowed to fight to the end against President Trump's threat to raise tariffs on Chinese imports to more than 100%. Donald Trump said he'd impose an additional 50% duty on Chinese imports if Beijing didn't withdraw its extra tariffs on US goods. Stephen McDonnell has more on Beijing's response.
They're saying that if Donald Trump makes good on his latest threat, well, they've got their own countermeasures, which they'll reveal. What it could include is significant increases on US agricultural products, so soybeans and sorghum, a complete ban, the import of US poultry into China. Now, all of that's going to hit straight into the Trump heartland. A suspension of Sino-US cooperation on fentanyl-related issues and a ban on the import of all US movies into China.
This is the latest world news from the BBC.
The 2025 Wisconsin Film Festival is going on now, all over Madison until April 10th. There are over 170 films of all shapes and sizes for you to choose from. This includes some of the best cinema from all over the world and right here in Wisconsin. Choose from comedies, dramas, experimental, animated, and student films, as well as documentaries, restored classics, films for kids, and more. You can catch these films at the Bartell Theater, the Barrymore Theater, and four venues on the UW campus. The last 4 days of the festival will take place at Flick's Brewhouse, located at the Easttown Mall. A guide to all the films and where they will be shown is available in the March issue of the Isthmus and online, and tickets are available at wifilmfest.org. The Wisconsin Film Festival is happening now through April 10th on a screen near you, helping keep local arts alive for almost 50 years. This is WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
WORT is excited to be in our 50th year. And to help celebrate, we are hosting the opening night of Madison's newest venue, the Atwood Music Hall. Join us on Friday, June 13th, for a great night honoring Clyde Stubblefield. The night features performances from Mama Dig Down's Brass Band, The Funky JBs, VO5, Rare Element, DJ Trevor Banks, and Kaboom Box. Andy Moore from the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz will host the evening celebrating 50 years of WORT and the grand opening of Madison's newest venue at 1925 Winnebago Street. Proceeds from the evening benefit WORT. Tickets are $25 in advance and available now at theatwoodmusichall.com. Be sure to shine up your dancing shoes and grab your tickets before they're gone.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 Madison. Listener sponsored community radio.
The People's Station.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
Oh, I say, you've been misled. You've been had. You've been took.
Man, listen, this is 2023, and we swinging chairs. I am not my ancestors, B.
Good morning, Madison.
Okay.
Gotta get it.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, Mad Town. It's your girl, Tara, a.k.a. Big T of the Plug. That's back in spring. Y'all know I'm about to bring some dope people on the air, let you know about all the great things happening in town. And today, I have a special treat. It's a treat for me. It's a treat for you. So y'all remember I was out in the world with my interviews all February talking to dope black-owned business owners, all the entrepreneurs. They checked in. Well, I got addicted. I told y'all I was enjoying it. And so I've got recording on recording on recording. Your girl over here learning how to edit the audio. New skill set, okay? But today I'm going to play a recording of a video that I got. A recording of an interview. There we go. That I got to do a couple months ago. I caught up with Corey Whitmore, who's the owner of Media 22 here in Madison. You're going to love it. I loved it. You're going to hear the energy coming through. But so we're going to play that for you. I'm here in the studio. My reluctant co-host and fabulous on-the-spot engineer, John, is in one of my favorite places to be, y'all. He's out there in North Carolina. Shout out to my people in Raleigh. I know it's warm and hot. My mom and my brother are on the way for a mom-son date right now this morning. My mom would not call it a date, but that's what they're doing. They're hanging out. So our group chat has been fun already. So shout out to all my North Carolina folks. And hey, John, enjoy yourself. Learn some stuff, but get on back, buddy. So anyway, it is Tuesday. It's your 8 o'clock buzz. I already said who I am. Let me tell you where you're at. 89.9 WORTFM Madison. I've got John filling in. Nope. I've got Dave filling in for John. There we go. Sitting back in the studio smiling at me through the glass. Thanks, Dave, for being here for us today. I don't know, y'all. It's spring, so that means like yesterday there's snow and today there's sun, and somehow in the middle of the day that happens too. So we're just going to keep making it through till we hit May. And May, you know, there'll be a little bit of rain, but that sunshine will start showing through. And you know there's for sure is Mother's Day. So if nothing else happens in May, that'll be fabulous, right? To all those mamas out there, last couple weeks we've had some great guests in talking about some really important women's issues, and some really strong women have came through. So I'm looking forward to celebrating them, because, you know, it takes a lot to be a mama. Let me know. I know. Y'all know. Good morning, though. Thanks for joining us. I don't know. You ready? Go ahead. All right. Here we go. Listen to us a little bit of what I was talking about. Again, Corey Whitmore, owner of Media 22 in near Madison. And we'll come back to you. This is Tara, and I'm sitting across from, to me, one of the most talented brothers in town, Corey. What do they call you? Dub Dash, right?
Dash Dub. That's an old Milwaukee name.
But owner of Studio or Media 22?
Media 22 is the umbrella.
Okay. Well, now I did my part. You tell us. Who are you? Because I chopped through it, but...
I appreciate you coming through and interviewing with me. I was looking forward to this as well, just for us to be able to sit and conversate. But like you said, my name is Corey Whitmore. The Dash Dub thing is the music name.
Okay.
When I had a record label in Milwaukee for 8 years.
Okay.
And so that's where it comes from. And so we did a few shows out here, and so some people's first contact is that music side of me. Okay. So they know me, so they'll call me Dash or things of that sort.
Yeah.
But right now, where you're at is Media 22, settled into, moved from a music label to a more service-based business for a number of reasons. One, because we relocated out here. I ended up closing the studio in Milwaukee when we left. But I had two boys, and they're growing up, and the being on the road and things of that sort from the music side is very demanding. You know, managing personalities, talent, and all that other stuff, plus trying to do engineering and producing is demanding. And so I wanted to settle in something where I could be home more, I could be with the family more, and something that's a little bit more stable financially. The revenue model for a music label like that is based upon talent.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of upfront money, a lot of upfront capital, and then hopefully that talent grows and flourishes. But if it doesn't, that's lost money, lost capital. And so here, I continue with the music. So have a recording studio here. And still do some of the DJ services. I took the PA system and stuff that we had as the record label, got a little bit more into DJing and used that as another service. And so as many artists know, especially in Wisconsin, if you're trying to perform and do things, we always ran into a lot of places and spaces in which and we have a stage, but we don't have a PA set up for you because most of it's for like live bands, yep. which comes in with a lot of their own stuff. Mm-hmm. We had to go and invest and get our own so that we could actually move around, get out of town, and try to make some money. With Media 22, we also, because of the pandemic, really pushed us into exploring podcasts. And so we started, as I think everybody started, with like with a lot of people, like Zoom. Once everything hit, and it's like, we're like, oh, we did like 8 episodes on Zoom. We're like, it's so confining. Can we expand upon this? And we tried StreamYard. And then we tried to, in our other location, we had 2 studios. It was much smaller than this. We tried to get some GoPros to see if we could do that with videos. Like, oh, wow, we should do our own video, see if we can get into that. We ran through that because the process was cumbersome. It took a long time to get the video off the 3 different GoPros, get it in a session, then edit it. We went to Mevo's, and then we kind of really explored a couple of different, probably 4 or 5 different ways to do podcasts before we settled into what we have here, which is 2 podcast studios. So we're sitting in one with the interview, the smaller one with a more of a conversational podcast, which is just like a one-on-one, and then the bigger studio, which has a more video capabilities, green screen capabilities, live stream capabilities. And that's really right now has been really what's pushed Media 22 kind of to where it is today. So,
okay. That was a lot. So I hope you all heard. There's like a lot of services. I know for me, I've come to you for conversations about like live production.
Yep.
I've come to you about small equipment rental.
Yes.
Supporting some of our DJs. And I've come out and seen you do things with youth, like yep. supporting you at Summerfest. That was dope. I know about the podcast because my daughter, little Tara, has done some things. What am I missing in that? I know you produce live music. I know you yes. do recorded music. What is something else that you offer as a service that I'm not aware of that could be utilized, right? Because we want right. people to know how they can engage with you.
Well, I think of late, and we did have this conversation about in our last meeting, is that a lot of businesses are moving towards content creation. And so we've more recently started to create packages to say, hey, we want to create this many video or audio deliverables for our social media, whether it's TikTok, whether it's Instagram, whether it's YouTube. How can we do that and what can you offer to get that done? And so, like for you, you said, hey, I'm going to be out at events. I'm going to be capturing photos. I'll be capturing some video. I'll be capturing some audio. But I need someone to put that together so that I now have something I can consistently post to my social media. We've had people that do podcasts that say, I can come in and get the interviews and record it. I don't have time to chop this up.
Yeah.
But my audience is here and here. Can you provide me content so I constantly have things to post here and here between podcasts and things of that sort? So that's something else that we offer. You already mentioned the stuff that I kind of do on the side, which is working with kids, working with youth, music production stuff. And so currently right now I'm working with Rob in the library, where I'm working in the detention center.
He's talking about Rob Dees.
Rob Dees, yes.
In the Bubbler program.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. So we go into the detention center, we go into the shelters, we work with a restore program for youth that have been suspended, expelled from school, and on an alternative path, at least for learning, at least temporarily. And so we go in there and we do like music production, we do recording, and that's stuff that I did back when I was in Milwaukee. I worked at the Boys and Girls Club for about 6 years. And so I was lucky to be in one of the 2 Boys and Girls Clubs that had a built out studio. So I was there on the south side for that time. So that's stuff that is not work to me. I mean, I enjoy that. That's probably, out of all the things I do, that's probably the thing I enjoy the most.
You know, I hear so many people make the mistaken judgment that not enough of us are interested in the community. Like, one of the things our community needs is mentorship. We do. Absolutely. But, you know, every one of these conversations I've had with Black men who are in business, you're already doing that, right, on your own. There's not a one of you that hasn't
talked about some work that you're doing volunteer otherwise with our youth in our community and hasn't name dropped by nature, right? Yeah. Like you just brought Rob up because you're working alongside of him.
Yeah.
And there's another example of a black man doing good, great work in our community. And so I constantly, first of all, I get really inspired by that.
Yeah.
But I also always challenge people who say what black folks won't do.
Mm.
Because if you just be still and be quiet, you'd see there's so many of us that are doing the work, right? So part of why I'm really interested in these conversations is because on my own, I've sought so many and met so many of y'all, but to start really bringing that attention, that focus to the world, because it's so much happening behind the scenes that people don't know. And unless their youth was in that class with you, they don't know you're doing that, right? And I just want to do what I can do to change that narrative, because it is a high need in our community, but it's also one that's currently being filled. We just need to know how and where and by whom.
It is, and the people in that circle aren't, I think the thing is that people in that circle aren't going out and advertising and taking pictures and posting up and doing all these things because they don't see it as something that I need to be, you know, I need attention for, I need to be rewarded for. This is something that, that you know, like I said, for myself, is just something that I enjoy. No matter if nobody in the community knows it, it really doesn't matter. The impact is actually for the kids.
The people I'm impacting every day.
I'm here for them. I'm not here to receive your praise or get your award or things of that sort. Honestly, that doesn't mean a whole lot. What means the most is, can I impact this young person in a positive way in which may, you know, change the trajectory of where they're going? That's the reward.
Yeah, and that's the type of person that I entrust my most precious kids to, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's literally what I've been out here trying to find and create.
Mm-hmm.
That's what started my journey on this path more than a decade ago, is that I needed that. And my son, our kids know that.
Yeah.
They know who's authentically sitting across that table from them, right? There's no faking it with a young person, not successfully.
Yep.
And while some of those, I have gotten accolades and awards that have meant something to me, but then there's ones that I don't covet at all, right?
Yeah.
But never has it been for that. And so I appreciate that in other people. I love to be seen, like I'm sure, like everybody wants to be acknowledged for the work they're doing in one way or another. But it's when you're out here, like, popping out your phone to take that video to put it on your story while you giving a homeless person a meal, not thinking about how that person feels, that then I start to question the work you're doing.
The motivation.
Yeah, right? Because if he was really there to feel the... And that's any scenario. That's not picking on any one person.
Correct.
That's any scenario of the work you do. Because when I've needed those services and those supports, I ain't want to be on your damn story. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's often the lowest of a strong person's point. That's when I need help and I need those people. And the people that were able to help me in those situations, they've earned my loyalty for life. But the people that were doing it for show and performance, not necessarily. And they're definitely not who I refer people to.
What was the reason that you started Each One Teach One?
Mm-hmm.
What was the basis of that? Was that something that you were looking into this community and seeing that there was that need?
Absolutely.
And so now I'm trying to, I don't see it, so now I'm trying to create it?
That's my philosophy, period.
Okay.
But so it came from a lot of places. It came from like my real life struggle as a single mom raising my family and trying to keep us out of harm.
Right.
It was like, first, I couldn't afford to take care of us because I needed to be there for the kids. When they were old enough, I got out to get the money, but then that left them without me.
Correct. Yep.
So we had another set of problems.
Right.
And when I started trying to go back and address those problems, I didn't find the resources that I needed around me. And the ones that were being offered to me, my kids didn't trust or engage in, so it didn't matter.
Right.
When I showed up at those places, I would get the, like, especially thinking about my son, I would get his reluctant participation because he's going to do what his mama says.
Yep.
And I would get the grown people saying, until he's ready to be here, I can't do anything with him, right?
Mm.
And I was like, this is never going to happen because he sees that in you.
Yep.
And then so I started going to the people that I saw him gravitate on his own to, which is his barber, the older guys on the block, the basketball coaches.
Yep.
And I went to them. And what I found is the basketball coaches were already oversaturated because every mom saw that in them. Real talk, right? The dude on the block... he wasn't confident enough yet. He felt like he still needed to get his life together and he wasn't in a position to add to my son's life, but you are.
Right.
Right? And maybe you're gonna learn something from him too, like it's a mutuality. And so that started my part, like solving my own problems is first where I started. But there's like always been a collective nature within me.
Right.
And the realization that no matter how great I make things in my house, all of us gotta step out that door.
Right.
So if my neighbor is not only still struggling with the same problems that I'm struggling, but then sees me successfully navigating them and I'm not sharing that, I make myself a target and a victim.
Right.
Even to the kindest heart.
Right.
Right. We always gonna look over and see somebody eating. If your plate is full and mine is starving, there's a part of us in human nature that's gonna resent your damn plate, right?
Absolutely.
And so for me to make a community and a place for my kids to be safe, not just growing in my house, but walking out my door, I had to acknowledge and accept that everything I struggled with was probably the same thing my neighbors were struggling with. And so that became this idea of, I found Each One Teach One actually learning, trying to be more connected to our African-American roots, rejecting some of the capital Christian kind of things like Christmas and different things that didn't mean anything in my household that were actually stressors for me, trying to reconnect to things that made more sense for me. And I came across the concept of Each One Teach One related to our literacy and slavery and the idea that the people who were allowed to go into the house in the church to read to the bedtime stories for the kids that were in their charge or to participate in Christian church, that it was punishable in some places by death and definitely by whooping for them to go back into slave quarters and teach that same skill. And yet, had we not been able to read and teach that to each other, we were missing, like, how much were we being left out of?
Right.
And so I take that and I apply that to every place I'm able to get, every piece of education I'm able to pull in.
Right.
Like, people who know me by face know that I have this ambiguous racial look, but that opens so many doors for me by just sitting there being quiet and letting people make their assumptions.
Yeah.
And my job at that table is to bring as many people to the table who I feel like have a voice and that need to be at that table.
Right.
And not to accusingly point out that you have the wrong people at the table, but to make a space where we can feel comfortable to work together, because that's how things are gonna change.
Right.
And that was really the foundation. And Edo LLC became the umbrella, that entity that I could pull it all under together. Because really, I woke up one day and realized I was doing a lot in a lot of places. And it was like from my heart, I was like, I used to tell people I'm a busybody for good.
Yeah.
And that's really what it was. And it was just because my daughters were cheerleaders and they needed cheerleading outfits. So I learned what it was to fundraise.
Right.
I started talking to people about what it looks like to solicit donations and donors.
Right.
Right. I knew I wanted to be part of my community, so I got involved in not-for-profit. And because of that, I learned that corporate structure that's really there. Right. And I learned, I'm a creative person, but I'm also a critiquer. Put something in front of me, I'm gonna edit it and shift it to what I need it to be for me versus trying to rebuild things all the time. And so all of these experiences and places I put myself as an individual for my own family and my own growth just made sense that I would be that conduit to bring them to my community, especially because that ambiguous racial look gets me at a lot of like corporate tables and different communities, but also like I've always had quote unquote the hood pass. Like I've always been somebody that could get in with my people and build trusting relationships. It feels like my purpose to connect those things. So that's where that came from, is that concept. And it's just grown into my ability to be an entrepreneur and to like to financially provide the lifestyle that I really want and set the goals that I want. And that's now what I'm interested in growing.
That's powerful. It reminds me of, I forgot who stated the quote. It actually may have been Kanye, but it's not something that's crazy. he was talking about Jay-Z and how he goes to meetings in different spaces and how he's able to in essence, as he described it, I think, move between the raindrops.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Where he's able to, no matter the room, be able to get in, maneuver, be comfortable and do those things. And
so I attribute that to my Sagittarian nature.
Okay.
Right? But yeah, for sure. That's something I realized early that not everybody could do.
That's a superpower.
My mom used to take me. So she was also an entrepreneur. I came from an entrepreneurial family. And one of the things she did was she freelanced photography and journalism. And so that took, right? So that took me into so many places as her sidekick.
Yeah.
Because, you know, why pay for daycare? She'd just take me along. But what it taught me is exactly that, to observe my spaces and find where I fit into them and to be able to do it in a confident, true to me way.
Yep.
And so it took until mid-teenage to realize that not everybody had that, because I just took it for granted. But now I know that that's really a tool in my toolbox.
Right.
Right, that really I am that person that can sit in dang near any circumstance you put me in, and I'm gonna listen for the language, and I'm gonna show up. I also am fearless to ask questions, and I find that that's not always the case, but that paired with then also thinking strategically about how to pair and connect people mm-hmm. is definitely tied to my purpose.
Yeah.
It's what makes me excited, and it's also one of the things I've been able to contribute to the world around me.
Yeah, that's incredible. I love to hear things like that.
It feels good to say it, right?
I love listening to the backstory, and then what are the contributors, the things that are pushing you forward and make you who you are. So that's.
But yeah, I've been telling people all the time. It seems like I'm altruistic, and I'm right, but really, all of these things came from selfish need.
Right.
Like I needed my son to be okay. I need my household to be okay. I wanted to not punch a clock. I was tired of having to go in the office and talk to somebody about punching in 5 minutes late. Are you serious?
Right.
And I'm doing three times the work of the lady sitting next to me who's on time. You better get out my face. But that was my attitude, and that doesn't work in a corporate setting all the time, right? And so I had to create a space where I could be comfortable, provide for my family, and also feel like I was doing work that meant something.
Right.
Like I knew I couldn't show up in somebody's cubicle and type all day and just be content taking home a check that kept my household afloat. Like that was never going to be enough for me.
And I think that's a similarity probably between us, because at a young age, 20s, I started to figure out.
You know what this age, that is young. Little babies. No.
that the corporate structure didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a bad habit of being in a structure and getting to that point in which I've just kind of had enough
mm-hmm.
and give you this 2-3-4-page typed up thing of better ways to be more efficient in what you're doing.
Okay.
And I didn't know it was a habit until it kind of kept happening. And you know, from where I was last, my last employer, which was about 3 years ago, three years ago.
Congratulations.
To my first employer, which I was working part-time at the airport in Milwaukee, and I would always pose these questions like, why are we doing things in this way? Why we could be way more efficient here if we did this? Why are you letting them get away with this? If this is our goal and what we're trying to do? And part of that's being young, part of that's being naive, but I started to see that I get into a place and I analyze the systems.
I was just gonna say, to me, I hear system analysis, right? Right. System change, process building, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this isn't making sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I would voice it to the immediate, and then everybody that's in my circle. I don't go and jump over anybody's head, but I'm saying, hey, here's what I'm seeing. Let me ask my questions. Why are we doing this? Can we change this? Can we move it to this? But then after a while, I get so fed up to a point that I'm like, I can't exist in this inefficient system.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just clock in,
mm-hmm.
put my feet up, do the thing, and then just be like, all right, I'm good. Let's dip. Even if it's something as, you know, something like baggage handling.
Mm-hmm.
Came in, I was just a baggage
handler. You needed to have the right way.
But I'm like,
this is Tetris.
I'm like, we can make this, I mean, easier for everybody. Mm-hmm. And when I see that that's not the case or what they're actually looking for, I become frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I leave, I leave you this document that says, hey, I say I'm always thankful. Hey, I appreciate, you know, the time here, But, you know, here are some things that I think may be able to work a little bit more efficiently and things of that sort and da-da-da-da-da-da. Even all the way up to my last employer where it came to the point that, you know, there's two things that will always bug me in a structure. One, the efficiency, wasted time, wasted effort, and things that I feel aren't done in that manner. The second thing is that telling me that you stand for something and me finding out the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's happened a few times where you've been hired and brought in for something. They've given you the whole mission and this is how we move and this is the impact we want to have. Now this is more in a nonprofit community space. And then you get in there and then you're trying to live by that. And now you're seeing that, well, that's not actually the case at all. I'm like, you know, do you care about the folks that you're here to help or here to serve or the things you're supposed to provide? And that's one thing that will get me out the door quicker than anything else. Because I'm always open to joining a team that's moving in the right direction in which I can make the right contributions to hopefully get the results or have the impact I'm looking to have. But as soon as I see that from top to bottom that we're not on that, that we're maybe on something else, or some people get hurt as collateral damage because of higher-ups, whatever it may be. Same thing. I got my little 4-to-5 page. You know, I appreciate y'all. But yo, this doesn't add up to this, which doesn't add up to this, doesn't add up to this. Which I was told, and I was under the assumption that we do this, this, for this reason. And now I feel that we aren't all moving in the same direction, even though it may be different parts of the organization that aren't moving in that direction. And so, to me, it almost feels like, well, you sold me a bag of goods. I can't mess with y'all anymore.
Yeah.
And so I gotta step.
All right. That was catching up with Corey Whitmore from Media 22 here in Madison. It's your girl, Tara, Tia, a.k.a. Tia the Plug. And we'll be right back after these announcements.
Do you have an insatiable curiosity about the world? Do you find yourself provoking conversations with your friends and coworkers? Are you a strong listener? Then you should consider applying to become the next host of A Public Affair, WORT's daily hour-long call-in talk program. We're now accepting applications for this volunteer position. The next host will be the voice of Tuesday's show and join a stellar lineup of folks who engage listeners in conversations on social, cultural, and political issues of importance every day of the week. We're looking for someone who is curious and well-informed, comfortable speaking on air, someone who can think on their feet and has at least 5 hours a week to prepare and host the show. And of course, we'll need you to be here every Tuesday from 12 to 1 p.m. Apply by May 2nd. To find out more information or apply, go to wortfm.org/talkhost.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Just Coffee, Madison's Fair Trade Roasting Cooperative. Just Coffee buys fair trade coffee to ensure equitable conditions for coffee grower cooperatives around the world and roasts locally in small batches. More information at 204-9011 or on the web at justcoffee.coop.
And here we are, 89.9 WRT. Thanks for tuning in with the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz. And here we go back to my conversation with Corey Whitmore from Media 22.
So there's a similarity and then like a different approach between us. A lot of my disillusionment in working for other people, especially not-for-profit spaces, yep, was exactly what you're talking about. But then also digging deeper and recognizing that there's a cause and effectual thing that happens there, right?
Yep.
I've created a program and I've come to this work because I care about an issue. Mm. Now I'm here and it's moving and we're trying to impact that issue, but the funding doesn't align with what I'm doing. And now 3 years later, this program has to end or I have to find another way to fund it because the powers that be that have the money they've contributed have decided that the focus needs to be elsewhere.
Yep.
So there's a reality to, once you create a business, it's a business, even if the goal is not for profit. And now you have staff and overhead you have to cover no matter what. And so one of the reasons I stepped away from traditional not-for-profits and also decided on my business structure, which is social enterprise versus not-for-profit, just being a strictly just like everybody else, I could have been business, right? Anybody could, was because I wanted to figure out how to navigate that in a smart way so that we can continue to be reactive and adaptive to what we really need.
Absolutely.
Right? I don't want to start a program and find that it's working. Like, I've got this dope program that we created called Lyrics and Leaders.
Yeah.
If I depended on funding from grants, I would have just lost the ability to run it,
absolutely,
right? I had to pivot the way I fund it so that I can, I see impact. I want to grow this and also I want to be the boss of it.
Correct,
right? I don't want to lose the ability to be exactly what I need to be when I need to be it.
Right.
So what we do in JRC, detention, looks different than what we do in the middle school, looks different than what we do in the community.
Absolutely.
And I don't have anybody telling me I can't do that way because, you know what, I'm funding 75% of this, right? So I get to say what this looks like. Now I'm growing from that where I've realized I want to offer that service to other people. So now I am looking to become a not-for-profit, but to be a fiscal agent. Because also what I know is that so many people come to me and want to understand grants. They want to understand, right? And then I talk to them and people have really novel ideas, but it doesn't need to be a full-on not-for-profit for you to realize it. And my own fiscal agency has allowed me to know that the support I'm looking for isn't necessarily readily there because I'm on this new path. I'm trailblazing, yeah. right? Yeah. So they don't really know what it looks like to have basically a mobile Goodman Center.
Right, yeah.
Right? Like, I've got six programs that are funded in six different ways, which sounds like a neighborhood center, but I'm nothing but like a neighborhood center, right? And so figuring out those things, and so my growth and my personal journey, again, each one teach one, has allowed me to see that this is something, like, so now I've got direction in a not-for-profit, whereas 3 years ago, if I would have created one, I would have just been throwing my hat in the Dane County pool of not-for-profits. So now that, like, those things make sense, and that's a slow journey I had to take to get there. And it also was responsive, like what you said. I got, not only did I go to, like, established not-for-profits to work, I also contracted with other up-and-comers to see what their journey was like and what I wanted to do. Now, I'm not so much going to offer my opinion to others as I'm going to take what I need and leave what I can. And then I, like, I know what I'm not going to do and what I'm going to try to do based on those things that I've learned. Right. And it's given me this larger understanding. Like, I wouldn't understand strategic planning for an organization had I not taken that director's job. And I wouldn't understand what I just said about funding cycles had I not volunteered to be part of raising and allocating other people's grants. Right. And so that's how I learned and how I put it into motion. But I, like what you said, resonates with me. I'm just not type A enough to leave their butt a list. You know what I'm saying? I'm just going to internalize it. And now that's, that, I'm adding that to Tara's plan of how to do to move. Right? But I agree with you. And then also, like, for me, I have to avoid the disillusionment. If you don't, if I don't feel like you're positive and I can't see where it's a genuine mistake, you will become the enemy. And the Sagittarius in me, like I said in the beginning, between just me and you, I'm a fire sign. That means either you're going to get set ablaze or I'm going to pimp off and act like I don't know you. And that's not professional. That wasn't a way to move forward either because I've also made some really valuable networking connections, right, through that. And so, like, not throwing out, whether they say the bath for the baby, the baby for the bathwater. Yeah, same thing. And I'm just trying to figure my way through. But I did realize that working for myself, like, I made space to work at somebody else's job. And then I was eager to get out the door to go do the work that I wanted to do. And that literally crashed. So when I support other entrepreneurs, they want to hear this defining moment where I planned and decided I was going to become an entrepreneur. And that never happened. Literally, life collided. And I sat in a room and had to make a decision which where my energy was going. Was it going to this person's dreams and building their business? Or was I going to take the leap of faith and keep doing what I was doing? Because I had gotten to a point where both of those things were happening so frequently that they were at odds for my time. And for me, that was comfortable. That was how it needed to happen. I walked away from a conversation, and for 1 second I was sad because I felt a little bit betrayed. Then I was like, ooh, I could take a break. Right? And then I looked at my calendar, it was like, and I've been drinking since then, right? And so, and I tell everybody that I talk to, everybody's journey is different, and some people can't imagine that, and they need a planned out thing. For me, it had to happen that way. Right? For me not to be worried about where, and even as I started out as an entrepreneur, even when I was working for other people, I looked at the world as quarterly. If I knew my contracts would get me through this next 3 months, then that's what I planned for, and then I executed and planned for the next. Now, that's grown to, like, 3 and 5 year contracts, and that's awesome, and that's really where I started. I really started, like, are me and my family going to be okay for 3 months, and then I'm going to spend these 3 months making sure that we could cool for the next 3 months. And that got us to where we were. Now, I don't know, like, I didn't have a mortgage. I didn't, right? I have kids that can go out and earn, and they all know what it looks like to pull together because they've also been on a struggle bus with me, right? They also been were like I said in the beginning, three jobs, and we still weren't making ends meet. We grew up in neighborhoods that I could afford, not where I wanted to be. And so there's aspects of that that's going to always be where we came from.
Yeah, I think we have a lot more similarities than I think that we know.
For sure.
And, you know, for me, it's been very similar as far as it wasn't something that was just planned out. And that's for either one. That's for the label, and that's for this business here. Like, the label was, I mean, in college, I was just starting to get into music. I had no music background whatsoever. But it was a result. It was a result of an experience of going through high school, going through college, that I felt that I was kind of dismissed and counted out.
Mm-hmm.
Where I felt that there was more that I can contribute, there was potential there, but you know, I was never, you know, the grade A student or B student or whatever. I'm going through school struggling, average student, on academic probation a few times in those first couple of semesters, basically just trying to figure things and find things out. And almost at every turn, it seemed like you ain't got it. And so coming out of school to start a label, looking back at it, it sounds crazy to me. Why I think that, hey, you know what? I'm going to finish college. I'm going to go ahead and just start a record label with no training, I wasn't even in band. But I had a big enough chip on my shoulder to say that, whether good or bad, I'm going to prove all y'all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to show you that I can get out here and take something from the ground up and build it. And have, you know, in our heyday, I had 8 artists. We were doing 40 to 50 shows a year.
That's crazy.
We had merch. We did openers or Big Sean, Keisha Cole, and all these other things. And it's just, I think I had to prove it to myself partially, but I had to prove it to other folks. And so I was willing to say, I'm just going to learn on the job. I'm going to wear every single hat that I have to wear. If we got to run rehearsal, I'm running rehearsal. If we got to go and market, I'll market. We got to go talk to venue owners, we got to go talk to venue owners. Oh, they don't have stage? Let's go get the PA system. Oh, let's go get the wireless system. Oh, I just started making beats. Okay, I'm going to continue to make beats. I'm going to learn engineering. Sorry about that. Uh-huh. But the thing is that it forced me into a space to be able to troubleshoot, problem solve, which is, I think, one of the greatest benefits of things that you and I do, is that you can't plan for all the issues that are going to happen, and it's right on the spot. It's that, oh, I didn't see that one coming. Okay, I may need to talk to somebody, do some research, go to some conference, do something so I can get this solved and I can move to the next. Oh man, yeah. I didn't see that one coming. I got to do the same thing again. See where I can get that knowledge. And I think that also helped me build up some confidence that I lost from the school system.
Mm-hmm.
Because coming out of the school system, my confidence was basically decimated.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel that I could do much of anything well, because I was too tied into what the tests and what the grades were showing me, and feeling that that wasn't actually a reflection of who I was and what my worth was and what I could contribute. I'm just an average student. Oh, I'm a D student. Oh, I'm out this semester. Da 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 da. And so I internalized a lot of that, and I think that really slowed the growth until I got into that entrepreneurship, and that expounded upon it, you know, 10 times, because it was something that, like I said, I was being on the ground, but something that you can kind of start to see growth and see victories in, and that was the process of probably really rebuilding my confidence. I had to go to a place, I had to almost kind of, nobody really does it themselves, but that was the place where I had to try and rebuild it with the help of the folks that came in the other places. I wasn't getting that at school. I wasn't getting that at the job spot. I wasn't getting that really anyplace else. And so that was important. I think that kind of was the precursor that set me up to be able to do this. Because with Media 22, it's been growth. It's been stages. I mean, a lot of folks know that it was in the basement. You know, in 2017, it was a basement studio that we kind of half built out. But I'm sharing that studio with my kids. So I got the Legos down there. I got the toys down there. I got the little mats and stuff down there. But from the previous experience, I knew that it was a process, and that, you know, sometimes just showing up every day and being consistent with it is one of the best things you can do to really continuously foster growth. And a lot of things I see in other folks of that inconsistency really hurts them. It's not even a talent thing. It's not even a confidence thing. But that consistency really gets them off. Start fast, cool off, and then disappear.
Yeah. So you made me think of a couple things. So my first thing is, as I'm listening to these interviews and going back, I'm compiling this list right now mentally, but I'm definitely just made a note to write it down, of things that are common across entrepreneurs, right? This entrepreneurial spirit. And you touched on a couple that have definitely been themes and that resonate with me. One of them is this realization that, like, you were willing to wear every hat. Yeah. Whatever it took, you were going to go execute. And it wasn't about being too big for it, right? It was really the path to get to where you are.
Absolutely.
This ability to, like, not come through the door thinking you're going to right away delegate or that that's what it means to be the boss, right? Like, that really, if you gonna only invest as much, like, nobody's going to invest more than I've invested. Right. So there's that. There's also this, like, willingness to jump in.
Yeah.
That's been something, this idea of, like, learning from our mistakes. I don't have failures, right? Like, I have things that might not have went how I planned it, or I got to readjust, but I don't call none of it a failure because I've never walked away from a situation not knowing how I could have did it better,
right?
Or who I can't trust. Or whatever it was, I came out of the situation learning and growing. So I don't have failures, and I've seen that resonate as well. Our experience at school was a little bit different, but it came from the same place. You said you took it as a challenge, and you wanted to show people, oh, that's so fundamental to who I am, right? Like, this idea, like, oh, you think I can't do it? Wait 2 seconds and watch, right? But I just tend to do it in a quieter way.
Yeah.
And when I felt like I didn't get that support at school, I took the school as a joke and not a reflection of me, and I left the school. And so a lot of my personality in education, like, people are surprised to find out that I was a high school dropout, that I spent more time on the block. Like, I was the girl that literally would come to school in my cheerleading skirt, do that, be the good little student, catch those good grades, and then the dudes on the block knew that they could also holler at me for some other things. nothing sexual, don't go there, y'all.
Right,
but I always took a thrill in that duality. But it confused everybody around me, right?
Yeah.
And it's I think sometimes I'm still that person. Like, people have an idea of me, and then I pull up and I'm banging, and they'd be like, "Whoa, she's ghetto." I'm like, no. So those things definitely resonated for me. But that idea of, like, I'm going to show you, this idea of, like, holding that chip in a way that, like, anger only gives me fuel.
Yep.
Right? And I don't understand people who let it defeat them. I try to make space for empathy and show to be with people, but I don't understand it because in my nature, watch.
Right? Watch
me do this work.
Right.
But I feel like that's been crucial to everybody I've talked to as well, that I view to be in the space of, like, successful entrepreneurship. And also recognizing nobody could sit across from you right now and not believe that you know your business.
Right?
Just listening to you talk, I know that you have experience and you know what you're talking about. And so saying that you started from a basement that you shared with your kids in Legos is really inspirational.
Yeah.
Right? It's really what our listeners who right now are trying to figure out that pathway for them or have this idea that's been in the back of their head and they just aren't ready to do it.
Right.
Like, to realize starting in your basement with the kids on Legos is real.
Yeah.
And you can't rush to be who you are. You had to grow to be who you are.
Right. You can't cut the corners. And, and a lot of conversations I hear with folks, and like I said, I'm all about the straightest, most efficient path. But I know in the space of entrepreneurship, like, there's really no corners to cut. I like to be honest. And that's even with some people that may actually get the bag up front. Because if you haven't fleshed out what you need to do with that bag, when you need to do it, and how you need to do it, they'll be in the same place as me, starting from the basement.
Yeah.
And so you just have to be able to be willing to show up, to take the knocks, to be consistent, and to push through. I always hear that people always give up in entrepreneurship many times right before they're about to get that break.
Yeah.
And I get it. In this space, we went from the basement for a few years. We went to a smaller place. I was out in Fitchburg that had two studios, but both those studios can fit in the one studio over there. To this place, each space we had to grow into. It wasn't that, oh man, I got space to fill this up. Nah, I mean, that second studio in the other place wasn't even filled for a while. I didn't have enough equipment to fill it. I had an idea of what I wanted to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't fill it. By the time we left, we were able to fill it. We came here, all this stuff here, half this stuff wasn't here. I had to see it first, had to be confident enough to say, hey, we're going to double our square footage and double the cost of what it costs to be in this space. That's a leap of faith.
Yeah.
And a lot of entrepreneurship is a leap of faith. Have I been, I mean, there's been days where I've come in so demotivated, I've sat in that chair over there for an hour. Not just thinking. Some of it is some self-loathing, I'll be honest. You know, how did I get here? Mm. You know, this was a bad idea. Mm. I didn't do this right. I didn't plan this. I got this problem coming up. How am I going to solve it? Many of them, and 4 out of 5 is bills, bills, bills.
It's funny. It's literally why you're saying that. For me, that's financial. So that's that makes me feel better to hear somebody else say it.
No,
especially a type A like you.
Right. I'm like, it's bills, 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 yep. bills. And it's, and there's been times, and I'll be honest, there's been times where I'm like, this is a wrap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a time last year, in the middle of last year, a couple of things it felt like it was a domino effect. A couple of things went wrong. And I'm like, I'm on a 5-year lease. This is year three. I'm like, I'm not going to even be able to fulfill this lease. I'm thinking probably in the next 2 months, it's going to be a wrap. And that's happened multiple times.
I loved this conversation. Yeah. I knew we were going to go off in many conversations and directions. And there was so much there. But I want to bring it back to knowledge about your business. So one more time, before we have to leave to go to the next thing we have to go to.
Yes.
Who are you? Where can they find you? What do you offer? How do folks connect with you?
All right. My name is Corey Whitmore. The business is Media 22. We offer recording, mixing, mastering services here. And music production services. So we make beats and do things of that sort. And it's just not for music stuff. It could be for intro for a podcast. It could be, you know, something that goes underneath
your commercial jingle. Else.
Commercial jingle, whatever it may be, we do that. We also offer podcast services. So we do have 2 suites in which you could actually come in to record your podcast. And that could be audio or video. We do offer a live stream of your podcast, so if you wanted to go to Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or Twitch, we can do that here. But if you say, hey, I'm recording someplace else, but I need somebody just to edit it and do things of that sort, we do that as well. So anything podcast you can think of, audio and video, we do that as well. And on the side, I do some DJing.
All right. And how do we find you? How do they connect with you?
The best place to go to see everything that we do is our website, media22llc.com. You can find us there. We're also on Instagram and Facebook at media22llc. So you can connect there.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Now y'all got to meet another dope person that I know. Get to know him.
Welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, it's been your Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz on WORT 89.9 FM. It's your girl, Tara, a.k.a. Tia the Plug. I didn't realize how much Corey pulled out of me in that conversation. Y'all learned a lot about me as an entrepreneur. Thanks again for tuning in. Have a great rest of your week.
Buy me pearls, take me on a cruise around the world, baby, you know I'm worth it, dinner lit by candles, run my bubble bath, make love tenderly to last and last, baby, you know I'm worth it, wanna please, wanna keep, wanna treat your woman right, not just dope. You know she is worth your time. You will lose if you choose to refuse to put her first. She will if she can't find a man who knows her worth. Cause a real man knows a real woman when he sees her. A real man always comes first. And
And it's 9 o'clock. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Tuesday, April 8th.
Years ago, an iconic bar named Another Raw Deal was a regular hangout for us irreverent, free-spirited, political progressives in Austin, Texas. Even those push-button hot air hand dryers in its restrooms were political. Printed on the big chrome button was this instruction: push here for a message from Senator Phil Graham. Mercifully, Graham is gone, but political hot air is still gushing from the likes of Representative Pat Fallon, an Elon Musk-hugging, plutocratic Congress critter from Texas. Lately, however, Pat has been learning the hard way that folks back home don't share his fanboy crush on the South African billionaire who is gleefully chainsawing crucial public programs that even Republican families count on. So, Fallon's own constituents are howling at him to do something. He is. This aloof and clueless public servant has erupted in a mad dog attack on the locals. At a recent town hall event in his red district, voters were furious that Musk is targeting the Social Security benefits they've earned. Fallon barked that, quote, no one has said they're cutting Social Security, but one of his voters shot back, Elon says it every day. Indeed, Musk is trying to kill it with lies, falsely attacking it as, quote, the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time. Then, Fallon stumbled into the GOP's briar patch of class bias, curtly proposing a different deal to replace Social Security.